there are a bunch of notes up behind, right? I don't know whose are they. Very well written, but if they are yours, please collect them. Okay, right. The topic for today is the destruction of commercial Babylon, because we have seen in our last study in chapter 17, the destruction of religious Babylon, or some people will call that the apostate church. I don't really know if it is the church leading or it's just a religious system. Can you understand what I'm saying? So we have, I know as we go deeper in or towards the end of Revelation, it gets to be confusing because there are different characters, and sometimes one character has got a few names. So if you need, in fact, we have got one glossary of terms for Revelation. It's right behind. I don't know whether we still have them. It's green in color. And that will be a bit helpful. Having said that, you need to understand that sometimes one character has got a few names, and one word can be used to describe two characters. Right? So, in chapter 17, we have the destruction of religious Babylon, led by the false prophet who's leading the one world religious system. One world religious system. You remember, Satan would want to set up three things to help him govern the whole world. There's one world government, the one world religious system, and then the one world economy that is being controlled using the mark of the beast. It's just some quick revision. And this one world religious system we saw last week, it was destroyed. The false prophet was killed. He was killed by the Antichrist himself, together with his alliance of the 10 kings. But toward the end of chapter 17, the last verse of chapter 17, verse 18, tells us that this woman we saw is the woman who rules, who will rule the great city. Now, that's a bit puzzling because we just read that the false prophet, this woman who's the prostitute, just been killed. So how can she continue to rule? So verse 18 is actually a link onto chapter 18, telling us that this woman is also the one world economic system. We call it commercial Babylon. Now, if that's still a bit difficult to understand or to picture, look at this PowerPoint. Who is this? Sorry? Satan, dragon, all right? That's correct. Wing Sing said dragon. It looks like a dragon, and I found a cartoon version of it. Not that I'm trivializing Satan. He's actually very powerful, all right? Don't think he's cute and cuddly. He's not, all right? He bites, and he has a nasty bite. And what is the dragon doing, or what's Satan doing? Manipulating, that's the correct word. Man, give that guy a McDonald's voucher. Chris, would you give him a McDonald's voucher, please? He's manipulating. He's the puppet master. All right, you know puppet masters. All right, they move puppets around. And among one of his puppets, you know, he's got many puppets. One of his puppets, and this character, you take him as the Antichrist. That will help you to remember the Antichrist. All right, and the Antichrist, he himself is also manipulating others. And one of those that he manipulated was this lady here, the prostitute whom we saw last week. He's the one, the Bible tells us, the Antichrist gives him the power, or gives her the power, the false prophet. All right, he gives the the prostitute or the false prophet authority, the Bible tells us. So the Antichrist is controlling the false religious system. But we said, why is it that the world in chapter 17 would gravitate and start to follow and look up to the false prophet? Because they're living in a very difficult time. All right. Strange things happen in the skies and in the world, and the government, the politicians have got no answer. So people gravitated towards the false prophet to seek divine intervention. Does this help? No? Isaac? No? All right. Okay. Listen, just try to follow. See if it's help. It helps. If not, then I'll speak to you after this. The Antichrist is also manipulating or controlling the one world economic system. All right. And this character here represents the one world economic system. Okay. So, and he rules the one world government. And today, with the false prophet or the prostitute out of the way, in chapter 17, it is also a transition, because we're told that the false prophet was killed. And this is a time exactly when the Antichrist himself will set himself up as God to be worshipped. And because of this, we know that this period, it is the midpoint of the tribulation. All right? Midpoint. When he was set himself up in the temple in Jerusalem and demanded to be worshipped as God. I'll give you a chart and... Oh, let me give you a map of Babylon. All right? See the relationship, the distance between Babylon in Iraq, modern Iraq today. This is the actual site of Babylon, the ancient city of Babylon, where Nebuchadnezzar built his hanging gardens. And Jerusalem, it is not too far away, all right, from Jerusalem in Israel. And Israel, right across the pond, and this is Rome, whom we say is probably the headquarters of the false prophet, a city that's built on seven hills. And Rome, and this is a point in the US, that today we think that commercial Babylon could be New York City. And I'll give you the reason. It cannot be ancient Babylon for some obvious reasons, which I will explain to you. And I just want you to see the distance, the distances between them. All right? Okay. Now, coming back, I'm going to give you a chart here, a very quick look at this chart that you have seen, but this is enhanced. There are more details on it. A bit more confusing. All right? This is the seven-year period, the tribulation. When the rapture happens, the church will be taken up. And then that will mark the beginning of the seven-year tribulation. And 3.5 years, as Daniel had prophesied, this is the midpoint when the Antichrist will set himself up as God to be worshipped. Why is it that he killed a false prophet and he needed to replace that? Simple. Because man needed something or someone to worship. Can you get that? Because there is a God-shaped vacuum in all our hearts. So they needed something to worship. And the Antichrist just replaced the false prophet, and he continued to rule the one world religious system. Right? So there are still three. And what is happening is from here onwards, we see that the 10 kings will be ruling together with the Antichrist for the second half of the tribulation, right up to the end when the last battle will be fought at Armageddon. And commercial Babylon, you can see it is running all the way right through to the end. And the last series of the bowl judgments, the seven bowls that was poured, I believe it straddled the first half to the second half. It probably covered from here right to the end. And it is during this period that the six bowl judgments are being poured out. And after, right at the end, when things are really at its climax, when the world is really in a bad shape, right? I would imagine out of 7 billion people, today we have about 7 billion people on planet Earth. All right? And the Bible tells us that about only a quarter would be left at the end of it. Can you imagine? Only a quarter. So out of this group here, out of four, only one would survive and go into the millennium. All right? And, well, there are a lot of things on this chart, but I just want you to understand the relationship between commercial Babylon and the government of the 10 kings together with the Antichrist for the second half. All right? See, the harlot, the prostitute is being killed just before the midpoint. Is that okay? Don't try to copy this. You can get it from the PowerPoints after this. Okay, right. Let's move on. So what I'm trying to tell you this morning is that the woman at the end of chapter 17, verse 18, is also used to represent commercial Babylon. And what is Babylon? You know, Pastor John, we use the word Babylon so often. Is it a man? Is it a place? Or is it a system? It's all this, all right? Babylon, to me, in my study, I've come to realize that it is a literal city. That's number one. But it has also come to represent a world system that is opposed to God. And that's Babylon. Because Babylon is the beginning of all the false religions. And Babylon would come alive again. May not be in literal geographical Babylon, but it is the revived Roman Empire. And the Antichrist will be using that to rule the world. The revived Roman Empire. And today, we would call that the European Union. But there is a problem because they have about 26 members at the moment. But in the Bible, it tells us there are only 10 kings. Right? But there's still time. I believe some will drop out. Right? So, we spoke about the Antichrist and the kings being political leaders. We have commercial Babylon today coming into the picture. And you and I today know fully well that politics and money today are so closely intertwined. They are inseparable. And that's the reason why today we have what we call money politics. And this really did not happen until the 1800s, when business started to move into politics. And today, you and I know that they are so interdependent, so interrelated, that you cannot separate the both. Just take a look around us. Is it not true? That where there's politics, there's money. Where there's money, politics is also involved. And we have got businessmen who are really controlling the politicians in many countries. I must qualify that. Otherwise, I'll go to jail, you know. Okay. I won't labor on this point, because you and I know too well, all right? what's happening in many big countries today. The businessmen are actually controlling the politicians, because whatever decisions the politicians make will affect their business. Am I correct? All right. So that's how they are related. But when a false prophet died, today we're going to see how God now is going to destroy commercial Babylon. And when the business is destroyed, the government of the Antichrist will naturally and quickly collapse with it. But first, I just want to give you some similarities and some differences between religious Babylon and commercial Babylon. There are similarities and there are differences. So that is why we say that the word woman is not just used for the false prophet, but it is used to represent both. All right. So what are some of their similarities between religious Babylon and commercial Babylon? Firstly, both are ruled by the Antichrist. I've given you some references there. You can read it up. Right? The religious Babylon was called beast from the earth. You would remember in chapter 13, the Antichrist, the beast from the sea, he's a beast from the sea. He called out the beast from the earth. All right. So he had an authority over him. And for the commercial Babylon, it's known as the home of demons in today's passage. The second similarity we find is that both are ruling as queens, and they are both filled with blasphemy. They are just blaspheming the name of God. And they are queens because in chapter 17, we see the description. One of those was that she was dressed in scarlet, in purple. That's the color of royalty. All right. In chapter 18, today, we'll find that she is described as queen. The third similarity is that both hated the saints, and they shed their blood. Lastly, both fornicate, the Bible tells us, with the kings. They seduce the kings. And they committed adultery with the kings. So this is what we find. All right? So these are the similarities. What are their differences? There are some marked differences. Take a look at this. The first one is that religious Babylon is called Mystery Babylon, whereas commercial Babylon is called Babylon the Great. And not only in chapter 18, we find that in chapter 14 and chapter 16, it's already they are called Babylon the Great. And secondly, religious Babylon is always called as a harlot who sat on the beast, whereas commercial Babylon is described as a mighty city or a great city. Thirdly, religious Babylon is called as a woman, a harlot, a mother of all harlots. But commercial Babylon is known as a habitation and a trading hub. It's a trading hub. Number four, religious Babylon was described as a city on seven hills. Could it be Rome? I think so. May not be. All right. Whereas commercial Babylon is described as a port city, visible from the sea. And we're going to see that in today's study. Fifth, he's killed by the Antichrist, the false prophet. He was killed by the Antichrist and the ten kings. Remember? All right. Whereas today we're going to see that Babylon the Great, the commercial Babylon, will be destroyed by God. One of the important things I just want you to remember here is that commercial Babylon is a literal city. Is it current day geographical Babylon in Iraq? I don't know. But I do know that if religious Babylon is Rome, and it's not the geographical Babylon, the ancient Babylon, then commercial Babylon need not be in ancient Babylon. But as we speak, much of ancient Babylon has already been rebuilt, not for habitation as Isaiah and Jeremiah predicted or prophesied, but it is for a tourist attraction. All right, so it's being rebuilt. Will it be destroyed again? I don't know. Maybe. But we do know that the ancient site of Babylon that we saw just now is not a port city. Even though it's built by the Euphrates River, it is not a port city. And the nearest deep sea port from Babylon is about 18 hours by train to the port of Basra by the Persian Gulf. And 18 hours is not a port city, all right? They are all transported down. So I think probably it is New York City, and I'll give you the reason why. But perhaps ancient Babylon will be rebuilt only to be destroyed again during the tribulation. I don't know about that. But quite certainly, ancient Babylon, to me, I don't think it is commercial Babylon. All right, I think it's either New York City or somewhere else. It could be Singapore. I hope not. In our study today, chapter 18, we are already in the second half of the tribulation, or some people call it the Great Tribulation, when the Antichrist himself will rule the one world government, operating on a one world economy, and he's still head of the one world religion, because he himself is now God. And simultaneously, as we have said just now, the seven bowls will be poured out during this period. And God, today we're going to see him dismantle the Antichrist system one by one. So today is actually the climax. Chapter 18 is the climax of the destruction, right? Other than the Armageddon, which we are going to see later on in the later chapters. So chapter 18, I'm just going to give you a quick breakdown on chapter 18, how it's going to look. Whoops, I've forgotten the last part. All right. This is one possible division for chapter 18. Right? Verses 1 to 3 would be the pronouncement of judgment. And then 4 to 5, God will be calling away his people to leave Babylon, calling away from judgment. And verses 6 to 8 is the spelling out of the judgment. God is going to spell it out. Verses 9 to 19, sounds of lament, people who are weeping. Verse 20, the fifth part would be sounds of celebration. And then verses 21 to 24, the final death blow. The final death blow. Look at chapter 18, verse 1 and 2. After this, it's the word metatauta, which is very significant because it's like a special word that catches our attention to mean that something new has happened. All right? Something new has happened. So after this, I saw another angel coming down from heaven. He had great authority, and the earth was illuminated by his splendor. With a mighty voice, he shouted, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a home for demons and a haunt for every evil spirit, a haunt for every unclean and detestable bird." After this, John saw another angel. Now, this angel is a special angel. He's a powerful angel with great authority and was really bright and shining. And he shouted, he pronounced, "Fallen, fallen." Now this is funny because in Bible language, this has not happened yet, but it is already in the past tense. Because as far as God is concerned, Babylon is finished. It's already in the past. Right? So that's why the angel was able to say, "Fallen, fallen is Babylon the Great. She has become a home for every evil spirit, unclean and detestable bird." Right? When a word is repeated twice, here, fallen, fallen, it means that it's going to happen. It's certain. There's the Bible, God speaks of certainty and finality and the speed at which Babylon will be destroyed. Later, we're going to read that it's going to be destroyed in one day in verse 8, but verse 9 and a few other verses, it will be described as in 1 hour. Commercial Babylon will be destroyed. And verse 2 used the word she. She's the woman, all right? And she's to the demons and the spirits together with Satan, they will control the world. Now, verse 3, chapter 18. For all the nations have drunk the maddening wine of her adulteries. The kings of the earth committed adultery with her, and the merchants of the earth grew rich from her excessive luxuries. For all the nations. Now, this is the reason why God is going to destroy Babylon. This is the reason. And the reason is she has seduced all the nations and turned their hearts after false gods to material gains. And the last two words, excessive luxuries. She's indulging herself in excessive luxuries. It's not just luxuries. It's excessive. How many of you have seen people who are filthy rich? Not just rich. How many of you know of people who are filthy rich? Jonathan, you know, would you introduce them to me? All right. I'm glad for you. But today, just looking around us, we know that there are people who are lasting for the four P's, we call it. All right, the four P's. Power, possessions, pleasure, and prestige. All right? Power, possessions, pleasure, and prestige. At one point or another, some of us were running after some of this. We don't have to deny it. It's a truth. All right? We're running after this. In Singapore, you and I know what's our favorite pastime. Two things. Eating and drinking. No. Eating includes drinking, all right? It's food, all right? Eating and drinking, all right, Mary, thank you. And then the other is shopping, exactly. How can we do without shopping? And look around us. We are, in Singapore, we are filled with restaurants and shopping malls everywhere. You don't have to go far. But can you imagine for a moment somebody shelling out or splurging $35,000 on a single drink? Never heard of it? Let me show you. There's this club in Marina Bay Sands. I won't even know how to pronounce this name. All right. And in this club, there is this guy. He mixes a few types of drinks together called a cocktail. You know what's a cocktail? It's not a tail of a cock. All right. It's a cocktail. It means it's a mixture. And in a glass, he will put one carat diamond in the glass. And it's $35,000 per drink. Guess who are drinking? Let me show you this lady who are drinking. She's the one who bought the drink. And of course, when you drink, you have to be very careful. If you want a diamond ring to use on a hand, you have to be careful. If you swallow it, after that, when you see it again, you cannot use it anymore. All right? Can you imagine that? $35,000. How many of you make $35,000 a year? Guess I'm the only one. This is not the end. January of this year, CNBC carried a report. 85 people, 85 individuals, 85 of the world's richest men, if you put them together, the wealth that they have is equivalent to half the population of this world. 3.5 billion people, their wealth put together is only equivalent to what is 85 of the richest men on planet Earth. It's the same amount of money they have. In China, this year they have got, I think, 100 over new billionaires in China alone. In the world, they calculated there are about 1,400 billionaires. But some are multi-billionaires. So if you put people like George Soros, Bill Gates, and Warren Buffett, don't call him Buffet, you know, he'll make a buffet of it's Buffett, all right? Just kidding. All right. You put all these people together, 85 of them. Can you just imagine the kind of people we have on planet Earth? How filthy rich they are, and they will and in Revelation, during the tribulation, the Bible tells us that they will live in excessive luxuries, and in their decadent and arrogant fashion, they will live, and they will not allow themselves to bring themselves under the control of God. They rule their own lives. But that being said, God is now going to call his own people to come out of Babylon. Verse 4. Then I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, so that you will not share in her sins, so that you will not receive any of her plagues, for her sins are piled up to heaven, and God has remembered her crimes. Crimes. That's the word, crimes. And God is calling out to his people. It could be believers. It could be people who have not taken on the mark yet. I don't know. But he's calling them to come out, to leave commercial Babylon, this evil system. If they are still alive during the tribulation, God said, get out quickly so that you will not share in her sins. You will not be participating in her sins, and so that you will not be affected, you will not receive the punishments that commercial Babylon is about to receive, because her sins has exceeded her limits. It has reached the doorsteps of heaven, and God cannot wait any longer. This is the final moment. And God is calling these people. And the fact that God is calling them, it means that there are people who are still in the world, trapped by the system. And God is saying, don't give in to them. And I'm telling you this, that the fact that God is calling them, it means that they have a choice. They still have to make a choice. If they want the easy way out, take the mark and you can continue trading and living and have a nice life. Or you come out, and you cannot trade, you cannot buy food, and you will starve to death or be killed. So God is telling them, get out. But today, you and I don't know about you, but for me, every night when I go home, it's such a relief for me that I can lie down on my bed to know that my sins have been forgiven. And when I wake up, even if I don't wake up, I'll wake up in heaven because my sins are forgiven. What about you? Another interesting fact I want to just bring out to you as we are talking about God calling his people out of Babylon throughout the whole of scriptures. there are seven calls of God to his people to come out of Babylon. And every instance, their home, that means Jerusalem, their city, the city of Jerusalem or Zion, is in the context, or it is being implied in the context. I'll give you the references. We won't look into it. And they are all here, starting with Isaiah 48, verse 20, Isaiah 52, 11, Jeremiah 50, verse 8, Jeremiah 51, Zechariah 2, 2 Corinthians 6, 17 and 18. And then the last call is, we find it here in chapter 18, verse 4 of Revelation. This is the final call. All right. And what is unique is that in 2 Corinthians, we find a call in the New Testament. In the New Testament, what does it mean? We're going to look at it a bit later. But first, understand that the word come out, when God says come out, it means to be separated. God is asking us to be separated from the world. And this warning equally applies to all of us today. And we need to be reminded that when John wrote this, he's writing also to the present-day church as much as he's writing to the tribulation saints. And today, you and I, we have been warned that we must not participate in the world system. Because our home is not here. We belong to Jesus, and our Heavenly Father is waiting for us. And when Paul wrote 2 Corinthians 6, verses 17 and 18, He's actually quoting from Isaiah 52, verse 11. Let me read to you 2 Corinthians 6, verses 17 and 18. Therefore, come out from them and be separate, says the Lord. Touch no unclean thing, and I will receive you. I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. This is our Heavenly Father speaking to us. We are sons and daughters of His. And He's because He's a Father, He's calling us to come out of Babylon. If we come out from Babylon, where do we go to? We go to His home to stay with Him. That's where we belong. And that's the good news, people. We have a loving Father who is calling all of us out of this evil system to be dwelling with Him in His home forever. But yet, you and I must remember that there is a balance to our separation from the world. God is calling us to be separated from the spiritual, the evil spiritual world that this world has come to be. That's still under the control of Satan. God has never called us to be hermits, to be isolated, or to find a cave and crawl into it. No, God wants us to be salt and light in this dark and thirsty world. And all of us have been given this great commission to fulfill. And we are to go to where the lost are. But when we are there, while we are there with them, we have to wash our hearts. We have to be careful that we don't become a part of the worldly system. All right, let's move on to verses 6 and 7. This is where God will spell out the judgment. God will spell out the judgment. Verse 6. Give back to her as she has given. Pay her back double for what she has done. Mix her a double portion from her own cup. Like that cocktail, you know? All right. Give her a double portion. $70,000 worth of it. verse 7, give her as much torture and grief as the glory and luxury she gave herself. In her heart she boasts, I sit as queen, I'm not a widow, and I will never mourn. Remember, God has a long memory. And if you and I refuse His grace and mercy, and we ask for justice and fairness, you and I will be in for a rude shock. And here, God, because they refuse His grace and mercy, God is giving it back to them double. And we see here an exhibition of pride. Notice verse 7, she boasts, I sit as queen, I am not a widow, and I will never mourn. There are three eyes, right? Same three eyes when Satan fell from heaven. Right? And if you follow Satan, you will be like Satan. And God will judge your pride. Because this commercial Babylon, they think that because of their wealth, they are untouchable. They are okay. But you and I know that that is far from truth. How many financial crises you and I have gone through? How many? And you think that's the end? You'll be surprised. All right? Another one is just round the corner. Right? So if you have any shares, sell them now. I just got word this morning. Right? It's coming. I'm kidding. I don't know a thing. I have no clue. All right? I can only tell you if it's raining when I play golf. That's all. Right, verse 8. Therefore, in one day, her plagues will overtake her. Death, mourning, and famine. In one day, God said, in one day, her plagues will overtake her. There'll be disease, death, mourning. You say no mourning, now you start to mourn. And because of all these calamities, there will be famine. And that's how people would look in those days. And the city of Babylon, she will be consumed by fire, for mighty is the Lord God who judges her. She will be consumed by fire. The whole city. We don't know how God is going to do that, but He can. And while God is patient and long-suffering, today, don't delay. Don't wait until it is too late. Too late. And God said He will burn down the whole city because He is the one who judges her. The next part, we're going to hear weeping from three groups of people, the kings or the political leaders, the merchants or the traders, and then we have got the sailors and the travelers. Right? Verse 9, we start with the kings. When the kings of the earth who committed adultery with her and shared her luxury see the smoke of her burning, they will weep and mourn over her. Terrified at her torment, they will stand far off and cry, woe, woe, O great city, O Babylon, city of power, in one hour your doom has come. There will come a time when it'll be too late to change. It'll be too late to cry. And here we find the kings, although the political leaders, they were crying and mourning. And verse 10 has an interesting phrase there that's repeated three times. They will stand far off. And I want you to take note of that. And they said, in one hour, your doom has come. Your doom. They didn't say our doom. Verse 11 continued to tell us, the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her because no one buys their cargoes anymore. That's the reason why they were crying. They are out of business, in short. whatever business you're in, you can close down your factories, go home, maybe play golf. You have plenty of time for golf now. But they were weeping because no one buys their goods anymore. Do you think that when Babylon fell, the kings and the political rulers, they were saddened because they got good friends there? No. And I can tell you for a fact that they were saddened because, as verse 11 tells us clearly, that they are concerned more because from now onwards, no one will pay income tax. Because there's no more income, so no more income tax. And the politicians will suffer. All the manufacturers, the factories will lose a big customer, a very big customer. And we're going to go through the list. And today, this is the reason why I think it is corporate America today. Because today, corporate America is the biggest consumer in the whole world. The biggest customer in the whole world. Am I correct? If anybody who says, oh, I've got a business in America, it means that they are doing well. Right? If you can't get into the American market, you will be struggling. Right? Because other countries will take your goods, but they will have difficulty paying you. But you and I know also that corporate America is bankrupt. America today is the biggest debtor nation in the whole world. Followed closely behind are the many of the European countries today. And nobody can afford to allow them to collapse. Because when they collapse, a dead debtor does not pay. Can you understand that? All right. If you have a creditor, he doesn't want to kill you. If he kills you, he cannot collect anymore. So that's just my own guess that it is corporate America. Take a look at all the list of goods that is being described here. 28 articles are being described here. Let's go through it. Verse 12. Cargoes of gold, silver, precious stones and pearls, which means no more luxury goods. All of you who are manufacturing jewelry, clothes shop. All right. Next, fine linen, purple, silk, and scarlet cloth. No more expensive dresses. So if you're into LV and other brands, goodbye. Clothes shop. No need to set up factories in China. No use. Verse 12, third part. Every sort of citron wood and articles of every kind made of ivory, costly wood, bronze, iron, and marble. No more luxury ornaments. Those chairs have got that, or rosewood with pearl inlaid and other gold ornaments. No more business. All right. Verse 13. Cargoes of cinnamon and spice, of incense, myrrh, and frankincense. Food, cosmetics. No more buyers. Second part of verse 13. Of wine and olive oil and of fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep. Whether you've got vineyards, wineries, whether you're manufacturers of noodles and meat factories, no more business. Horses and carriages. This is interesting. Not that they eat horses, all right? Horses in those days were used for transportation, all right? So horses and carriages. So if you're manufacturers of Lexus, Ford, Toyotas, no more business. You cannot ship it because your customer just died. The last part of verse 13 is interesting because it says here, bodies and souls of men in the NIV, which I think they did a great job. In other translations, they put the word slavery. And I think bodies is more than just illegal trading of people, slaves, or prostitutions. But it means that there are people during the end times who would sell their own bodies for a few lousy dollars so that they can survive. And I tell you, it's really sad, because the Bible is saying that these are people who would compromise their belief so as to survive. Much as we remember Jacob and Esau. Esau sold his birthright for a bowl of porridge. And this is what the Bible is speaking about. People who would sell their souls so that you can live a little bit longer. Why would you want to do that? Verse 14 continues, they will say, the fruit you long for is gone from you. All your riches and splendor have vanished, never to be recovered. The kings continue to cry, to lament that Babylon, that all her luxurious food, you know, the grapes and all that, and their possessions that they have enjoyed are now all gone, never to be brought back. Never. So that's the end of their lament for the kings. Now, joining the kings, the next group that came up is they are the merchants. Verse 15. The merchants who sold these things and gained their wealth from her will stand far off. The merchants, right? They will stand far off. Notice this phrase being repeated again. Terrified at her torment, they will weep and mourn and cry out, woe, woe, O great city, dressed in fine linen, purple and scarlet, and glittering with gold, precious stones and pearls. In 1 hour, such great wealth has been brought to ruin. Again, these merchants cry because they sympathize with their friends who was suffering or who have been destroyed. No, it is because their business have now been badly affected. And listen to what they say. They say all these words, and to me, it is empty words. Words that you need not say because it is so obvious. They were just describing the past glories of Babylon. And Babylon is now dead. And it doesn't matter whether you're dressed in fine linen, purple cloth, and glittering gold. It doesn't matter how good you look in your coffin. When you're dead, you are dead. You may look good, but you're still dead. And these are empty talks. And, you know, I paused for a moment to think about this when I was studying. And how true. When the day I die, you will hear people coming and say, oh, John is such a gentle person. John is such a nice father. He never throw his temper. He's so helpful. Those are empty talks. It's rubbish. No need to say. All right? Because I'm already dead. No matter what you say, it doesn't matter anymore. And those words are words which mean nothing to me. I would rather hear you talk about Jesus, talk about God, talk about what the Bible, you're learning from the Bible. All right? But here, when you and I die, you will have friends who come and say empty words at your coffin. And I want you to know that this is what the world is about. And you better know now, because the world doesn't love you. The world loves your money, just as these merchants do. And we move on to the third group, the final group, the ship's captain, the travelers, and the sailors. Chapter 18, verse 17, the second part. Every sea captain and all who travel by ship, the sailors, and all who earn their living from the sea will stand far off when they see the smoke of her burning. They will exclaim, was there ever a city like this great city? They will throw dust on their heads and with weeping and mourning cry out, Woe, great, old great city, where all who had ships on the sea became rich through her wealth. In 1 hour, she has been brought to ruin. When they see the smoke, this leads me to believe that all these sea captains and sailors, they were able to see the smoke, which means that it is a port city, all right? And again, we find empty words that came out from their mouths because they themselves are suffering now. Their business are being affected. Nothing to ship. No cargo, no container cargoes anymore. No passengers. No cruise ships. All the Star Cruisers will have big problem filling up their ship. So here we have goodbye Wall Street. Goodbye Babylon. The affluent city is now no more. We have just seen the utter destruction of the whole commercial system. And we have the kings and the politicians, the merchants, and those who are in business, the ship captains, they will weep because their business has come to an end. And verse 20, strange, suddenly we have a call from God to celebrate. Verse 20, rejoice over her, O heaven. Rejoice, saints and apostles and prophets. God has judged her for the way she treated you. And all this while in our study in Revelation, we find the saints, they were weeping, isn't it? Under the altar, they were crying out and asking God, how long? But now God is saying to them, rejoice, the time has come, and I'm going to answer your prayer the way that they have treated you. And this brings us to a principle that you and I must not take revenge. We must allow God to do His job, because that is His job, and in God's way and in God's time. And we know that the time has come. Verse 21 introduces us to the final death blow. Verse 21. Then a mighty angel picked up a boulder the size of a large millstone and threw it into the sea and said, with such violence, the great city of Babylon will be thrown down, never to be found again. We're told that John saw a mighty angel picked up a boulder the size of a large millstone. You know what's a millstone, isn't it? All right. In olden days, they used this to grind, to break down the grains into powder. So the angel picked up a big millstone and threw it and said, this is the same way that Babylon will be thrown down into the sea with great violence. And you know when a stone, not just a millstone, when a stone hits the water, it sinks very quickly and it doesn't float anymore. That's why it's never to be found again. And God is saying to Babylon, you will never rise again. Never. You and your evil system will never rise again. Verses 22 and 23. The music of harpists and musicians, flute players and trumpeters will never be heard in you again. No workman of any trade will ever be found in you again. The sound of a millstone will never be heard in you again. The light of a lamp will never shine in you again. The voice of bridegroom and bride will never be heard in you again. There will be no more entertainment, no more trading, no more manufacturing, no more joy. There will be no more people falling in love, getting married, having a family life. In fact, there will be no life at all, God is saying to them. No more life. Because the destruction will be so quick and so complete. The interesting thing, two interesting things to note here, that from verses 21 to 23, you find a phrase, never to be, never will be, or will never be. Now, this phrase, in the other translations, is being translated as no longer. And I counted them 6 times. This phrase in the Greek is the same word. It appeared 6 times. And why 6? I don't know. Maybe God is telling them it's the end. Because 6 is the number for fallen man. Man was created on the 6th day. And God is saying, you're finished. You've fallen. You're done. All right? 6 times it's repeated. Never to rise again. An interesting question we may have to ask ourselves is that, wow, you know, Pastor John, in the midst of all this suffering, people dying and getting plagues and all that, how is it that we are called to rejoice? Is that correct or not? But you and I need to know that there is a reason why we are called to rejoice. And God, in the closing verses, gave us 3 reasons for the termination of Babylon. I love the word termination. How many of you have watched The Terminator? All right, I love it. All right, he comes up to them and say, "You're terminated," isn't it? All right, I love it. And here God walks up to Babylon and say, "You are terminated." Maybe not in that tone, maybe a bit deeper. But 3 reasons for the termination of Babylon. Number one, verse 23 tells us, your merchants were the world's great men. That's number one. And God is saying to them, your merchants were great. Why were they great? Because with their wealth and their power, they have been exploiting and abusing the poor. That's the reason. That's how they became rich. And the second reason, by your magic spell, all the nations were led astray. Babylon used magic and the occult to deceive the nations. And then lastly, in her was found the blood of prophets and of the saints and of all who have been killed on earth. All who have been killed on earth. They have to take responsibility. Babylon has murdered all of God's people. I'm going to stop here, but I'm going to close and have you think through with me some thoughts. Number one, you and I need to remember that our home is not here. Our home is in heaven. And you and I, we must not compromise. We must not sell our soul for a few lousy dollars. And today, even today, we don't have to wait until the tribulation. We've seen people betraying Jesus just for a few lousy dollars so that you can make a few lousy dollars and you can live a bit longer on this crummy earth. This crummy earth is going to pass away sooner or later. How many of you have heard this week, this past week, he was addressing many countries, including Indonesia, that we need to do something about our climate or we are going to perish. That was his message. And everybody knows so well that this world cannot last much longer. And why do you think that spend billions and billions of dollars going to find another planet? Because they know that this world will not last. And for us, we have a home waiting for us in our Father's house. I hope that if today, while you're sitting here, and you're doing well. You're doing well in your job, you're doing well in your home, you're doing well in your health. This is not a good indicator that God is pleased with you. It may well just be the opposite, because if you're a part of this world, the world loves you. Jesus said, the world loves you, and everything will go smoothly. And this same principle we find in,